south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
It's a funny thing. I have listeners from all over the world, and I guess that's not so unusual, but you have to wonder, why would people from countries other than the oppressive states of the U.S., Canada, and Europe want to get the hell out of Dodge, too? Well, some might say almost all first world countries have become so expensive to live in, and they've saddled their citizens down with so many stinking laws, not to mention a ridiculous number of taxes, that people, the ones that have a brain anyway, are looking for options like Latin America. Take this email that just came in. It starts, "G'day, Johnny. Greetings from Melbourne, Australia." I wish I could read the rest of the email that way, but I'll crack up while doing it. Anyway, it says, "I've been listening to your show for the past 2 months or so, and in honor of not wanting to do things arse about, I've started from episode one, which means, Johnny, I've got some catching up to do." Arse about. Gotta remember that. Then he says, "Fortunately, sort of, I'm being checked out of hospital after heart surgery today, so I've got a few weeks of recovery listening ahead. Those first shows like episode one are so bloody long ago," he says, "that you probably don't even remember. But I'd be interested in seeing the list of towns in Latin America you do recommend moving to. The ones that are big enough to offer a good life but not overrun with other gringos. I look forward to more listening, Johnny, and I might even hear you read my own email out loud when I catch up in about 5 years. Cheers, mate." Signed, Ben from Melbourne, Australia. All right, Ben, good question. You know, when I first started the show, what was it now, 9 years ago, I did put together a little report called Johnny's 17 Best Hidden Latin American Cities and Places, or something like that, where I outlined my top 17 picks in Latin America for safe, low-cost, low-profile living. So I picked 17 places. You might even call them paradises to ride out the coming economic storm. And it is coming, you know. Though people do always pick on you when you're ahead of the curve. They give you crap until it happens, then all of a sudden, you're a clairvoyant. Anyway, Ben, about that report. Well, it was great for its time 9 years ago, but things have changed mightily in the last 9 years. Though I still firmly believe more than 3/4 of those picks would still make that list today. Though some of them, like for example, Margarita Island, Venezuela, you know, anything in Venezuela is off the list. And Granada, Nicaragua is off the list too. Anything in Nicaragua is off the list. And Roatan, Honduras is off the list, not because it's not a great place, it's just that it's almost first world expensive now, and we're looking for bargains, right? Low cost of living. The other problem is the gringos are piling in. So if you did visit Roatan way back when, and you happened to revisit the place recently, you'd figure out pretty quick why the prices have been jacked way up. It's being inundated with cruise ships. And of course, they dump their passengers off for the day, they swarm the island, suck down vast quantities of umbrella drinks for $10 a pop when they used to be two. Rent a rickety beach chair for 4 hours at $20 a pop. Well, it doesn't take long for the other vendors on the island, no matter what they're selling, to see they can get away with gouging the day trippers. You get the picture. So I guess in the end, over 9 years, my best 17 list has held up pretty well. I can honestly say there are only three I would strike off that list. Oh, and by the way, 9 years ago when I made up that list, there wasn't a single town in Mexico on it. Nor was there a single city or town in Costa Rica or Panama on it either. Clairvoyant, right? No, it's just that even back then I had 20 years boots on the ground and I lived in Mexico, Costa Rica, and Panama. Whereas most people, in fact, the vast majority of people who make up lists, you know, lists are pretty popular. Like the 10 or 20 best of whatever. Problem is, in most cases, practically all cases, authors almost never actually live in those places. They might just pop in and out for a couple of weeks, but they don't stay, live, and mingle there long term. For example, in my case, I lived in Costa Rica for 2.5 years, owned 2 places there, one on the beach and one in the capital of San Jose, and I had a business. Oh, it was great at first, but believe me, after about 1.5 years, and seeing what the gringos, tourists, and dollars had done to the place, I couldn't get out of there fast enough. Then lived in Mexico about 1 year, lived in Panama 1 year, Colombia, Peru, Honduras, and my favorite, of course, Guatemala. Anyway, bottom line, I have a to-do list, and I promise to revise my 17 best picks. I guess after 9 years, it's way overdue. So stay tuned for that. It'll be coming out in a special report in the spring. Oh, and by the way, speaking of Australia, I've been getting all kinds of emails and reports from people saying that it's even become a worse Big Brother state than the U.S., if that's possible. They've got currency controls, heavy bank restrictions, little by little eliminating the use of cash. All kinds of crazy stuff's happening, and I can see why astute, intelligent Australians are looking for that plan B. And not a one of them, according to the emails I've been getting, wants to get out of Dodge and move to the east, like India, China, Indonesia, Japan, Thailand, or Vietnam. They tell me it's way too much of a culture shock. And as for the Philippines, well, it's half Muslim, and they're warring against the Christians. Not to mention the language barrier is almost impossible to overcome, and of course, many do speak English because there are many former English colonies there. However, it's still, they tell me, almost impossible to assimilate. You're just never fully accepted, not like you eventually are in Latin America. Of course, you're never going to assimilate completely in Latin America unless you speak Spanish, but if you live off the gringo tourist trail and you're not a complete slug, that will come eventually. All right, now, due to popular demand, we're going to do a little update on the stem cell thing. Remember our lady who first reported in about 3 months ago or so that she'd gone to one of the stem cell clinics that I've been recommending? She went to the one in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. Oh, and you might remember the lady that reported in is from Canada. I first met her at one of my expat insider seminars. She really is a fantastic person who's just about ready to make the permanent leap to get out of Dodge. In her case, Dodge Canada. Anyway, a couple of days ago, I asked her if she can give me a little update on the stem cell thing, because a lot of you out there are waiting to hear what's happened with her case. Remember, she was diagnosed by her Canadian doctors as absolutely in need of a hip replacement. So without further ado, here's what she says. Hey, Johnny, Melody reporting in. My stem cells are amazing. It's been 3 months now, and I'm healing every day. My range of motion has doubled. I can actually tie my shoes normally now. It's been 4 years since I've been able to bend over and tie them from a sitting position. I'm able to do a whole lot more exercise now, too. I started out on my Precor exercise machine at level 1 resistance and incline. Before, I could only do about 5 minutes a day every 3 days. Now I'm up to level 3 resistance and incline on the machine and can do 30 minutes every day without any real discomfort. I'm also noticing that my sleep is fabulous. That really helps with the healing. Now I'm working on the muscles around the hip as they deteriorated a lot over the past 5 years of limping around. As my muscles are getting stronger, I notice it's easier and easier to do all kinds of other stuff. The level of energy I have is remarkable. I saw a friend for the first time in 2 months, and she was open-mouthed at how great I looked. She said I looked so much younger and wondered, what was I doing? I laughed and told her about the stem cells and the intermittent fasting I'm doing too. I believe the fasting also helps quite a bit. Then she says, Johnny, by the way, how did your stem cell adventure go? All right, me, Johnny, here. Let me explain that a little bit. Now, a couple of months ago, I put together a little trip for myself, my mother, and my two brothers to go to a stem cell clinic. My mother, because, well, she's already had a knee replacement, and they're talking about a hip replacement now. My one brother, who's 10 years younger than me, had a series of stents put in his heart in his early 40s, and the doctor is saying that his injection fraction is so low, he may soon be on the list for a heart transplant. So that makes him a great candidate for stem cells. And my other brother, also younger than I am, by about 4 years, he was absolutely nuts about sports. In fact, he was such a good hockey player. The National Hockey League came around to scout him out when he was 17, a senior in high school. Then, when they were about to sign him up, he blew out his knee, and his specialty was goalie. Consequently, he had 2 knee surgeries and a rotator cuff surgery. So the hockey thing fizzled. And today, after all that and the great American diet, he's a mess. Overweight, severe case of arthritis, high blood pressure, on 8 different prescription medications. Pretty much the average American adult statistic. Now, as far as me, I've got no issues at all. I'm not overweight, no prescription meds. My only problem, intermittent migraines, but I figure, hey, the more the merrier. Let's all go down to the stem cell clinic. Problem is, about a month and a half ago, my mother fell down and screwed up her leg and broke her arm in three places. So we have to wait till that heals and she's out of rehab for the leg. And I've got my seminar coming up the 10th of January. So I think we're not going to make the voyage to the stem cell clinic till February or March. But I've been in contact. It's all set up and it's going to happen. All right, back to the rest of Mel's email. She says, Johnny, I haven't had time to listen to your podcast lately as I'm busy painting the house to get ready to sell it in the spring. That means we'll be down seeing you guys again soon. So, Johnny, thanks again so much for the stem cell information. It's really been a life changer for me and my husband. I can shovel snow again. Not that I want to, but it allows him to take a break from it this year. Cheers, Melody. All right, there you have it. Another Boots on the Ground progress report on stem cells here in Latin America. By the way, for you new listeners, if you want all the information I've gathered on stem cells and the places to go here in Latin America, the ones I know of and have been vetted out and recommended, just shoot me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and mention the stem cell thing. And by the way, I make absolutely nothing by giving you these referrals. So then what do I get out of it? Well, emails like Melody's. Come on, if getting an email like that doesn't make your day or your week, then you really do have a problem. You just might be a sociopath. Your only option then? Politics. All right, now comes this obtuse but funny email from a lawyer named Kelly. He said, Johnny, I heard you mention trusts a couple of times on your show. Well, have you know, trusts are right up my alley. Setting up a trust, you know, is one of the number one ways to protect your investments and capital from lawsuits and the IRS, believe it or not. Though I'd be willing to bet in Latin America, most of the trusts are not set up at all to do any of the aforementioned things. That's why I should have titled my little email here, Why 1%ers in Latin America Set Up Trusts, or How Wealthy Latinos Protect Themselves from Their No-Good Children. So, Johnny, what's that supposed to mean? Well, it's like this. On its own, the title or the name trust, or even the word trustee, the person handling the trust, is completely neutral and has no negative connotations. Then he says, from a legal perspective, a trustee was nothing more than a fancy title for any individual, usually a lawyer, who was legally obligated to look out for another's personal affairs, to be trusted, so to speak. Then he says, in the United States, trusts are the stuff of wealthy WASPs whose trustees would watch over the inheritance or trust funds, as you might call them, they'd set up for their idiot sons and daughters. Because you see, Johnny, parents who have great wealth or big businesses, they realize sooner or later which of their kids are truly idiots or spendthrifts and or incompetents. You know the saying, there's one in every crowd or family. Thus, a trust, Johnny, can often save a company or even a legacy. Now, most trusts are operated under strict guidelines that have been set forth by the parent WASPs or industrialists who fear what they had built up would be pissed away on Ferraris, yachts, Learjets, and crack cocaine. So they set up how much money could be dispersed when and how. Then, if all went well and according to plan, their idiot sons and daughters wouldn't get their hands on the bulk of their wealth until they were old enough to accept the fact that they were truly idiots. Then there would still be enough money to run the business or continue with the legacy while limiting their idiot offspring's ability to live in a wasteful and useless fashion. Speaking of trusts in Latin America, the reality is there is so much old money in Latin America that was either earned or stolen generations ago. You wonder how it is that the money wasn't pissed away through multiple generations of idiot offspring. Well, that's because the businesses and huge farms they own are so massive and generate so much wealth that they still operate under 19th and 20th century monopolistic practices. So even if they're poorly run, they're the only game in town. For example, you often find within a Latin country or region, there's only one, maybe two, beer, cement, or pineapple brands to choose from. And the local citizens are firmly bonded to those brands. That kind of accumulated wealth is hard to destroy. And often, even with a few generations of slacker, entitled kids, there will be a few stars that will emerge, making sure the company's moving in the right direction. And these days, the real money is often not made with the old enterprises like sugar, tobacco, or cement, but through newer and more modern acquisitions. For example, McDonald's, Wendy's, Subway, and other first-world franchises, and cell phone companies. In Latin America, it's not the hard-working man on the street who's pulled himself up by the bootstraps, scratching up enough to buy a McDonald's franchise. That's not the way it happens in Latin America. It's a fact that all of the major franchises you recognize, from Taco Bell to Home Depot, were snapped up early on by old money looking to diversify. All right, then Kelly goes on and talks about how gringos and expats can set up a trust to protect their capital and investments here in Latin America. Though he mentions it's not really necessary unless you have idiot moron kids who are expecting an inheritance, or you feel you have to maintain with a certain lifestyle because you know they can never do it on their own once you're gone. He admits in the vast majority of cases you won't need a trust, but just an SA corporation, if you have a good amount of wealth or property. Because you see, here in Latin America, an SA corporation, that's Sociedad Anonima, will give you 100% protection against personal lawsuits, whether the suits or demands are coming from within the country or a place like Europe or the U.S. Plus, the way SA corporations work, a lot of people set them up, have the corporation open a bank account, have the corporation buy a boat, land, cars, investment property, businesses, whatever. And then when they sell that stuff or turn it over to their kids, if that's what they're going to do, they just turn the shares of the corporation over to that person or to whoever they're selling it to. The deal is done, and they pay no income or capital gains or inheritance tax, because it's simply a transfer of the corporation from one person to another, and whatever the corporation owns goes along with it. All right, now here's something to ponder. Kelly mentioned that trusts are often set up by parents who know their kids are idiots or morons. He mentioned how some entitled kids of the rich will piss away the dough on Ferraris, yachts, Learjets, and crack cocaine. And suddenly, for a second, I started thinking about a Time magazine cover I saw. I think it was in the 80s. On the cover was a crack baby. Man, back in the 80s and 90s, people were talking about crack babies all the time. And on talk shows, you had doctors, sociologists, psychiatrists talking about how it was going to be a huge problem in the future when these kids came of age. Well, guess what? If you do the numbers, they're of age right now. So where are all the crack babies, and what are they doing? Where are they working? Where are they hanging? Maybe that's why the world's so f***ed up. Now, there's a sociology master's thesis whose time has come, huh? They'd be in their late teens, 20s, and 30s, right? Now, I'm no anthropologist or sociologist, but let's see, crack babies. Where are they now? Think rappers, reggaetoneros. Think reality shows, gangbangers, guys with neck tattoos. Think prisons. So then, what about female crack babies? Where are they now? Well, think multiple face piercings, Facebook and Instacrap addicts, young kids with the attention span of a titmouse. I've personally noticed there are an amazing number of young people up in the States, not here in Latin America, but mostly up in the States. They don't look you in the eye at all when you're talking to them. Then you've got your Walmart and store attendants that know less about the products they sell than you do. I'm sure you've had that experience. You go into a store and ask an attendant what aisle something or another is in, and he shrugs and just kind of wanders to the store looking for it himself. I mean, come on, these are people who work 8 hours a day in a place and don't even know where the stuff is. Former crack babies? You be the judge. You know, if you just go back and look at recent history, we're in the age of the young adult crack baby. You think you'd be running into them all the time. Well, maybe you are. Maybe that's why we have countless morons and mental midgets demanding free everything. Might their damaged brains be the explanation for reality shows? For the new wave of everything free social democracy? Things like minimum free income from the government? Of course, I could be completely wrong about this. It's just a theory. But you tell me, where are the crack babies? It's the mystery of the ages. Oh, and why all of a sudden the proliferation of ass crack pants? I think we're onto something. Let's think this thing through. Ass crack pant babies. Hey, just connecting the dots here, you know? Then again, I could be completely wrong, because it seems the ass crack pant thing is strictly a male phenomena. You just don't see ladies celebrating, well, whatever ass crack pants are supposed to be celebrating. In fact, the ass crack pant thing for women goes completely against fashion, since there are whole racks, even walls, full of pants and jeans in women's clothing stores selling nothing but butt lift pants. In fact, there's a famous franchise clothing store coming out of Columbia. It's called Columbia Jeans, and that's the only thing they sell. Butt lift pants, or as they're known in Spanish, pantalones levanta culo. Which begs the question, What up with that? By the way, jeans in Spanish are jeans. You know, speaking of entitled rich kids, here's a story I think will amuse you. Now, you longtime listeners know I played in various rock and party bands throughout Latin America. And for a while, for a couple of years anyway, I was in this very tight little group. In fact, our lady lead singer, we had two singers, a guy and a gal. She went on to win a Latin Grammy Award, for what that's worth. Anyway, I was the only gringo in the band. And all the other guys, just by chance, were children of the Latin rich. That's how I learned how the stratified 1% lived. By the way, it's interesting to note that we played gringo party music, gringo rock that is, almost exclusively. Because the bars and discos and such on the tourist trail, like Cancun, Costa Rica, Tulum, Playa del Carmen, Rio, Panama City, a lot of the beach resorts, well, those places always cater to gringo tourists. So there was always a great demand by drunken gringos for a very good rock band specializing in English music. You know, ZZ Top, Guns N' Roses, Aerosmith, and of course 60s and 70s classic rock music. But you know, there's nothing worse than listening to a really good rock band specializing in English language rock music, and the singer or singers have a Spanish accent. That kills it for everyone, the gringo audience anyway. Well, that was one of the reasons I was in that band. I was the gringo that could whip the singers into shape, you know, train the accent out of them. Anyway, we played a lot for around 2 years, and one night, after a gig, our drummer had too much to drink, hit a pole with his car, and died. So the band dissolved for a couple of months, and suddenly, one of the guys called me up and said, got a new drummer. And man, what a handsome guy he was, an Antonio Banderas type, except when he stood up. Let's just say he was well over 4 feet high. Now, talk about the children of the wealthy. This guy's dad owned one of the biggest beer companies in Latin America, the Pepsi-Cola franchise, and the biggest, most popular bottled water franchise. So you might ask, was this guy snooty? Did he have his nose up in the air? Well, not really, except around the help, which can wear on you. Oh, and what help am I talking about? Well, every time he'd come to band practice, he'd arrive in the biggest, blackest, shiniest, bulletproof Chevrolet Suburban you ever saw, along with two bodyguards. Pretentious, you say? Sure was. Except, we liked the idea of the bodyguards because they were our roadies. Awful nice having people lug your equipment around for you. Guys in suits and earbuds, no charge. Anyway, one day, the big Suburban pulls up in front of the house for band practice. The two bodyguards get out, followed by a really beautiful young Latina. And the bodyguard said, we'll be back. We're going to drop her off at home. So they left, and I said to the drummer, who's that girl? And he said, nonchalantly, my father's girlfriend. Now, I'd been over to their house a number of times, or I should say their mansion. Mom and Dad were together, and by all measures, it looked like a nice, happy family, except for the fact that Daddy had a mistress, and his son, our drummer, didn't mind it at all. In fact, he covered for his old man. In the meantime, a couple months later, the drummer introduced me to his fiancée. Good news, he's getting married. Beautiful girl from Colombia, went to school in the States, got her master's degree in San Francisco, I think in marketing or something. And so for the next month or so, she came to every one of our gigs. She was kind of bonding with his family, getting to know everyone, setting up the wedding details and all that. Then one day, during one of the breaks at our gigs, she came over and started talking to me. For some reason, it seemed like she'd rather talk to me than the other guys in the band. I don't know, maybe because I was a gringo and she spoke almost perfect English, that and the fact that she'd lived in the States something like 6 years and went to university there. Whatever it was, she'd like to sit and talk to me. But this time she just wasn't making small talk. She told me she'd had it. She was going to cut it off. Call it quits with Eduardo. Even though all kinds of dough was spent and all kinds of arrangements were made and all kinds of trips, etc., back and forth from Colombia to Guatemala, etc., she told me she just could not stand his family. And I said, well, what's the problem? She said basically that they were superficial jerks and they treated the help like insects. And though they were filthy rich and her parents were too, she said there was a big difference between wealthy Colombians and wealthy Guatemalans. She explained they had no class, no culture. She did not want to marry into a dysfunctional family. So in the end, she dumped him and told him his family were a bunch of jerks. Because you know what they say, you marry a Latino or Latina, you marry their family too. Oh, and by the way, after they broke up, to save face, he took off for a month or so. By the way, he was a brand new, freshly minted architect. I believe he went to the University of Texas. Daddy paid for that, of course, and I understand he wanted to bring a bodyguard, but school wouldn't let him. Imagine that. Now, picture this. He's a freshly minted architect. Now, I know for a fact that in Latin America, even in the States, when you graduate from architecture school, you end up working for another architect as kind of a slave draftsman for a while to pay your dues. Sometimes you don't even get to work with another architect. You end up working at a building supply outfit. Anyway, it takes years to pay your dues enough to have your name on a shingle and actually start building any kind of projects. But not so with Eduardo. His dad was so well connected and so loaded. When I asked him what he was going to do now that he'd graduated, he pulled out a tube with some architectural drawings and said, "I've got this new hotel project I'm working on in," I think he said, "Nassau, Bahamas." And in that minute, I thought to myself, man, these Latin guys, these 1%ers or 0.1%ers, are living in a bubble within a bubble in a different world. Of course, they're not all like that. I mean, look at the girlfriend that dumped him. She came from high rollers too, but she had culture and values. Which brings me to the guitarist in my band. Man, he was a hell of a player. While the band was together, he got married too. And one day after a gig, he got plowed. He liked to drink. And he said, "Johnny, you know what? I feel guilty. I've only been married 2 weeks and I've already cheated on my wife." Man, what can you say to that? But why? He said, "Johnny, it's a Latino thing. It's in our genes. My dad cheats on my mom. My uncles cheat on my aunts. All crap excuses. But you know, it gets worse. Latinos have big families. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. And these guys have sisters. And their sisters, believe it or not, sometimes even play wingman. Or at least they keep quiet when they find out their brother's cheating on his wife, who the sister is normally very good friends with. But blood is thicker than water, so it's the unwritten rule that sis never tells. Anyway, that's one way I got educated about the 1%ers, Latino high society. At least you could say I got to be an observer on the fringes of it all. All right, now a few words about my January 2020 Expat Insider Seminar. Starts on Friday evening, January 10th, ends the following Thursday night. Just go to www.theexpatfiles.com and click on the seminar link, or go to theexpatfiles.com/seminar. That's where you'll get all the info and sign-up details. And remember, you can still get in on the early bird discounts till December 1st. Then we're back to regular price, which is $500 more than it is right now. And again, if you're looking for a roommate, normally we can hook you up, and that way you can save $750 off the price of a single. So right now, there's no better time to get that Plan B going. And you know, there's a question that always answers itself. Tell me, are things getting better up where you live, or worse? You know as well as I do, you need an escape plan, a Plan B, an insurance policy in case you have to get the hell out of Dodge.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.